Awesome. All right. Yes. So you are in Raleigh, North Carolina. We're also in North Carolina.
Really? Whereabouts?
We're in Fayetteville, North Carolina.
Oh, nice. I didn't know. Yeah. That's great. I just moved here 6 months ago with my family. So Miami girl new to North Carolina.
Oh, Miami.
Yep.
It's cold here.
It's far better.
At least right now.
Yeah, yeah. What have you liked best about the move, moving from Miami to Raleigh?
Oh, I love this house. This is our first house purchase ever, and definitively our last house purchase ever. We're never going to leave this house. It's a mid-century gem that was probably built in 1964 on like half an acre of forest, which you can kind of see back there.
Yeah.
And it's just like, we didn't expect to find this house. And as soon as we saw it, we were like, well, that's it. We bought it sight unseen. Our realtor was incredible. The experience was interesting to be on that side of the equation, since I've been on the marketing side for so long. So to really see what the experience looks like as a client was eye-opening for sure, from a perspective standpoint.
Well, that's cool. You know, Miami, Florida is going to hold AXPCon now, so it's interesting how it's flipped.
It's funny you say that, Ruben, because I was just working on the comms plan for the announcement for Miami, so we're excited.
Oh, very cool.
The announcement's been made, but there's going to be a lot of communication around just like getting everyone excited and buzzing about EXPCon and frankly, getting tickets early, because we've got some early bird tickets left, and anyone who's looking to get the best price for the best investment is going to need to act real fast. So you heard it first.
I love it. We actually have a 12-step play. This is totally different. We'll jump right into it right after this. We have a 12-step play for every event we go to. So not to any cost that it costs to go, we're going to make sure we get a pretty high return on that investment. So we're excited for you.
I love that. That's great.
You ready to get started?
Let's do it.
Awesome. So if you don't mind, tell everyone who you are, what you do, how you do it, and all that good jazz.
Sure. So hi, everybody. Happy Wednesday. I'm Victoria Koster. I'm the VP of US Marketing with City EXP. I've been here 6 months yesterday, specifically was my 6 month EXP anniversary. What I do is lead the US team on driving strategy and marketing and communications for any initiatives that are US focused. And given that the bulk of our agents are in the US, that tends to be a lot of different initiatives that either start in the US and scale outward, or that I partner with my counterpart for Canada on, in terms of like what we're promoting. For example, EXP exclusives, if you all are familiar with, is our Zenlist platform. That's something that touches US and Canada. So I collaborate with Noor Marzouk, who oversees Canada operations for marketing. And we work on the strategy. How do we get this incredible information and resources that EXP is putting together for our agents in front of all of you in the way you need to hear it, in the outlets and channels that you need to hear it from, and in a way that resonates? Because we all know you have a lot on your plates with everything you're doing for your clients. So our biggest challenge and the most exciting one is figuring out how that messaging gets you and meets you where you are and gets you all excited about what we're continuing to bring to the table.
Very good, very good. So I believe you have about, correct me if I'm wrong, 13-ish years of marketing history.
13-ish. That's correct. It'll be 14 years in real estate marketing next April. I've been at a couple different brokerages before landing at EXP. I was at a Sotheby's franchise originally, was at a boutique brokerage for a little bit in between, and the majority of that time was spent at Compass, where I was for about 8 years from 2015 until about January of this year. So I think the value of that experience is I've seen a bunch of different models. I've seen what has or hasn't worked for agents and for marketing in the past. And I've also seen consistent philosophical challenges that the agent has in one, delivering the best service to their clients, and two, handling marketing and figuring out how to do marketing, which is so important to your businesses, while keeping your businesses doing what they need to be doing and focusing on what you're really good at. So that's been a through line. And I've seen a different perspective based on every brokerage I've been at on how that brokerage approached it. And I'm just like really confident in the way that EXP empowers all our agents to do their best work and to own and love the marketing that they're putting out in the world. So it's like a 180 from where I was previously, which is fun and liberating and hard.
Yeah, yeah.
So that makes it fun.
Sorry about that. I will say, for anybody who's watching, if you do have questions, just ask. We will ask those questions if they're appropriate. We'll ask the questions. And then same with, obviously, as always, anybody in the room. If you do have questions, please ask. So what has been the biggest difference between, you know, Sotheby's, Compass, independent brokerages, coming over to eXp? eXp is a large brokerage. So what is the biggest difference? Do you have a thumb like holding you down on certain things you can and can't do, although it's a larger brokerage? What do you see, different types of freedoms? What's the biggest differences that you're seeing?
Yeah. To me, the biggest difference is this idea of agents as heroes is what I call it. Agents in the spotlight, right? Every brokerage I've been at before, it's been brokerage has brand and agent at Sotheby's, for example, agent falls into brand. And that's sort of where it ends. And then there was Compass where brokerage has brand, agent can have personal brand as long as it fits under brokerage brand. And I think eXp right. really flipped that on its head and said, agent brands are what resonate with the clients that those agents serve. And why should they look the same and feel the same and smell, taste, touch the same? Like that, there's no reason why one brand for one particular realtor or team should look like somebody else's. Like you're all different people. You bring different energy and vibes and experience to the table. So that's the biggest difference to me, is just agent brand first and us giving you the tools that you need within Marketing Center to be able to bring your brands to life, if that's the tool that you use. And if agents don't have a personal brand, you still have that resource available to you with a ton of templates and designs to meet your needs. So that's been really fun and liberating. And I think the moving target in terms of how do we continue to give you all what you need, knowing that you're all going to do it a little bit differently and you're empowered to do that here. That's been the biggest difference for sure.
Yeah. I was at a different brokerage as well. And when I was asked in the beginning, especially why making the move and what's been the biggest difference, it's definitely been freedom to be creative, freedom to express. And that does show in marketing and other conversations we're having. So yes, type of feel. So we do have a question that popped in was, what is the best way to handle our social media marketing? Do you think it's better to just hand it off to a social media manager?
Great question. I think I will qualify my answer. One being, if you are well-versed in social media and it's something you really love doing, I've seen agents really take it and run with it and be able to own it because it's their passion and they engage with it. If you find yourself going, I don't even know what to post, I don't even know what to say, like I'm too busy handling my business right now and my transactions and my lead flow to be able to even be consistent on my platforms, then like, yeah, kind of better to hand off to a social media manager in my particular experience, because it's a whole other job. And then you can have that person help you with analytics, determine if you're doing any paid social advertising, who your best audience would be, et cetera, as well as handling your organic posts if that's something that you want to do. So to me, it's like, if it's feeling like a burden, hand it off and make that investment, because that's going to buy, like you said, Rumi, it's going to buy you time to be able to use somewhere else that's really going to help you move that needle and boost your bottom line for your business specifically. So to me, it's like, do what you're good at. If you're good at social media, great. And if you're not, hand it off. I'm terrible at social media on my own personal account, but that's neither here nor there.
Yeah. All right. So when does it pop up that it is maybe not your strong suit? Because obviously, you know, if you have kids, you definitely see this. You put them in something, they start working at it. They don't want to do it, but you're like, just push a little bit harder to find out if you like it or not. When do you finally get that gauge internally, I guess, if it's a good fit or not, to continue with marketing on social media yourself versus hiring someone?
I think if you're finding that you cannot be consistent, these platforms are only effective if you can be consistent on them. And what that means is, like, are you posting several times a week? Let's say, for example, 4 to 6 times a week. Are you engaging with the people who are engaging with your content? If somebody likes or replies to your content, are you able to, in a timely fashion, reply to them, especially if it's a question that they have or they're sliding into your DMs because they want to hear about a listing that you posted? If you can't get back to that kind of communication yourself, that's where you're potentially doing yourself a disservice from a time perspective. So that's where having someone to manage and specifically be charged with engaging and sending any leads, which are most important to you, would come to be valuable to your business.
Right. Do any of y'all have questions on that? Yeah, I would keep turning around every once in a while. If anyone has questions online, keep asking them. I love it. What are What are the three things every agent should be doing right now in terms of marketing to crush it in 2024?
Ooh, specifically right now, holiday gift to your clients. I'm going to tell a real story that happened a couple of days last week. I was sitting on my couch, which is upstairs, having a meeting with my team. I look out my front window. I have a big sliding glass door that faces my driveway. And whatever thought I had, I stopped immediately. And I said, you guys, my realtor is coming down my driveway. And I paused, like I muted myself. I turned off my camera and I ran to open the door. And he had come with just like, whatever, a bottle of Prosecco with a little tag that says, grateful for you this holiday season. And that made me, one, remember how much I love Ivan because he's an incredible person. And he did us a huge service getting us this house. And two, reminds me that Ivan is there and that if someone's asking for help with real estate, that he'd probably be the first person that I refer, although he's not an EXP agent, but I want him to be. So please, if you haven't done your holiday gifts, deliver them personally if you can. I think that makes a really big difference, because just like the hug I was able to give my realtor and like, I literally paused my meeting. I was like, I'll be right back, was really special. So please do that if you haven't. You have 5 days left if you celebrate Christmas. I think you're late for Hanukkah, but it's never too late to give somebody something special and remind them that you're there to serve and that referrals are the biggest gift that they could give you back. So that's one. I think number two would be, if you haven't started planning 2024, please do, especially with like the kind of content that you want to put out. And we're always going to have additional shareables that we'll give you, and we're working on a lot of Awareness Day campaigns for 2024 and beyond. So working on a Black History Month toolkit and shareables for that, among a bunch of other awareness days and holidays that we'll be celebrating. But if you have content that you're thinking about, or if you're business planning and you've been thinking like, oh, it's gonna be a little slow around the holidays, take some time to think about where you're going for next year. Because if you don't know where you're going, I hesitate to say that you'll be able to get there. So get really specific on your goals for 2024 and then decide how marketing helps you get there. So that's specific to those goals. That's two. Three, play around with AI and automation. Like I was writing a bunch of different commercial scripts for a different project. And I worked with Jasper AI to churn out 42 scripts in probably 3 collective hours, which might have taken me 20 hours to do if I had just taken pen to paper and been like, I don't really know how to write for these different companies that I was helping promote. So please, if you haven't worked around automation and ChatGPT or Jasper, do yourself the favor, because that's going to save you the ton of time that you also will be able to reinvest in your clients.
I love that. And good segue to who just asked a question. Allie did a ChatGPT class for us not too long ago. Go to our channel, just put in Allie and ChatGPT. You can check it out. She crushes it, along with bringing on automated text messages that get sent to people when you text something on Instagram. So she's fire. She's figured out the AI stuff, and she's learning as more AI stuff comes out. So check her out. She does have a question. I want to do a giveaway to grow the community. What are some lessons learned we can implement?
It's a great question, Ali. And I love the spirit of it. I think for me, the giveaways that are most relevant are going to be like, make it local, right? Especially if you're in a specific community, I find that helping support small businesses really shows that you're invested in your community itself, right? So instead of like, whatever, a gift card from Target, like, is there a local boutique that you know people love going to or love to get a gift from? Is it, I think a home store, home decor boutique makes the most sense, or make it relevant to your business in some degree, at least related to, could be really interesting, especially now, right? I think you want to be able to give away something that a potential client would keep in their house and have be a conversation starter. So if it's something really beautiful that could go on a centerpiece of a dining table, whoever wins that giveaway will then be able to say, I got this from Ali Garced. She did this giveaway and she was my realtor, or she is a realtor and I learned and engaged with her and I won this. And then they'll be like, oh, wait, can I find her on social media? Yeah, this is where you find her. So try to make it something that starts a conversation. I think that just helps give it more life beyond the actual winning itself.
Yeah, we
were
collect
just those leads.
And do what? I'm sorry.
Collect those leads while you're at it, obviously.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah, her and I were just talking about this yesterday about giveaways. What's interesting is like, if you do go to that that business that is local to you and you go in there, you could do a Facebook Live or just a selfie with the person behind the desk and say, hey, this person helped me out so much. Look what I'm buying. If you want something here, you know, $25, $30, share this video, hashtag with this, and then we're going to do a drawing later. Then you can do a video with the person who won the drawing later. Like, it just keeps going and going, especially in terms of marketing and getting your name out there on all these platforms.
Yeah, give it legs. And I think if we look at giveaways separately, like if it's swag separate from a giveaway to grow your community, think about, like, I don't know, there's a lot of farmers markets in Raleigh. So think about just like a beautiful canvas bag that you could like maybe work with a local, let's say design school to have somebody design something really cool with your information on it, and like give away bags at farmers markets to people who are standing there going, I don't know where to put all of these tomatoes. Like, that's just something that people will carry, and your name will just also be out there in the community and places where people are engaging with each other.
That's a good point. We have a farmer's market here in Fayetteville too, so you got to come by if you do.
How far is Fayetteville from Raleigh? I don't know much about North Carolina yet. How far is it? Okay.
Yeah, so not far at all. You can listen to this again, and you'll be back in Fayetteville. You can drive and listen to this. She said, and in terms of agent attraction, any different type of play there? And huge, huge thank you.
It's a great question, Ali. I think for me, agent attraction is something that I've seen happen at other brokerages, but without an incentive, right? Like, so I think it's more, if you make it value driven, if you talk about the value that you're getting as an agent who works at eXp, you don't necessarily need to talk about like rev share and tiers and levels and all of that, because at this point, I think agents understand what our model looks like. And two, that's an incentive to you to help contribute and grow the company, but that's not what's going to get someone to come here and be productive here and stay here. So talk about how being at eXp has changed your business. Like, has your production increased? Have you increased your team? And talk about the information that has changed your particular experience as a realtor, being able to serve your clients, and the rest follows. So make it value driven and value forward. And you'll hear this from a lot of influencers, that the agents who are the strongest at attraction never actually talk about attraction, because that's not what gets people over here. It's an additional opportunity from an aligned compensation standpoint, but really it's people want to know why coming here would change their business, and by virtue of that, change their lives. So stick with that.
Yeah. And you hear it a lot. They say, don't EXP on people. And that's kind of what you're saying. And if you guys do have anybody who else is watching and talk about production and all the things, Ali has crushed it. Icon Agent has built a referral type business now. Capper will be Icon in 2024. It looks like they'll be Icon in 2024
Amazing.
As well. We have people here for these type of questions if you do want to talk production. Any questions so far? All right. Any more questions online? We do have another one that came in. My client, so maybe they have one, but that's a good start. My client are typically first-time home buyers. Where do you recommend I spend dollars, Instagram or Facebook?
From Facebook user. I'm going to say Instagram, one, because it is more of a visual platform. And if your clients are first-time home buyers, my guess is they are looky-loos that like to be engaging with beautiful photography. And if you're looking for that sort of client that is interested in looking at something that's aesthetically pleasing, et cetera, I think Instagram, one, lends itself to that. And two, I think the engagement on Instagram right now is higher than Facebook specifically. I think maybe 10 years ago, you would say something different, but I particularly don't go on Facebook at all unless my mother-in-law is sending me a salad recipe for Christmas Eve. I'm like, what am I doing on this Facebook link? So I'm finding that the audience is stronger and more engaged on Instagram right now than previously. But I think when you're managing your ads within Instagram and Facebook, those can be optimized as well. So you could always A/B test. And if your particular first-time home buying clients are gravitating more towards Facebook, because everybody's different, regardless of what my personal preference is, then you can always A/B test that and say, okay, Instagram's not performing, then you can double down on Facebook or vice versa. So that's the beauty of digital ads. You don't have to pigeonhole yourself into one thing that may or may not be working for your particular demographic.
I love it. Yeah, just test it. We got Sarah in the house. I was told Facebook was better for because there is people with money on there. What age group I'm being targeted? She is probably in the middle of a meeting. So this is why, like, the language is a little chopped up.
I understand the question, Sarah. Yeah. Okay. I think it's less age group to target, Sarah, than potentially demographic, because if we're saying people with higher incomes are on Facebook Don't worry about the typos. It happens. If we're saying people with higher income are on Facebook, then it might not be so much age specific as it is demographic and household income. That being said, please do more due diligence on that, because I have the help of the incredible social team here at EXP that works with me on the analytics and being able to target the right audience. And I know that Facebook is always changing what you are and are not able to use as a filter when you're picking your audience. So I would say, again, test it. I guess you could assume that a higher age group will have a higher income, but that might not always be true if you're working with high net worth millennials, for example. I think right now the income really depends. Income is not necessarily as tied to age as it has been.
Yeah, I'll say personally as well, I see a lot of engagement on both Facebook and Instagram. But something I do, and tell me your thoughts on this, is I'll make a post and say, for example, I'll start on LinkedIn or maybe Facebook. I'll carry it over on all platforms. I'll take off the hashtags like, what is it that Instagram has now used that is trying to take Twitter? I got it on the phone. But either way, they don't take hashtags. Threads.
Oh,
so I'll take the hashtags on Threads.
Yes.
I'll push it out to be omnipresent, essentially. Good play, not good play. What are your thoughts?
Good play in the sense that, like, content can have multiple legs. Play that could merit a little bit of refinement is the way that that post sounds across different platforms. So for example, LinkedIn is always going to be more professionally focused because that's what LinkedIn is. So you may want to be less like informal on LinkedIn than you might be on Instagram. So you could say the same thing, but maybe you're driving people to LinkedIn to a specific webinar recording or whatever, where on Instagram you might be driving them to something on stories. So just like double check when you're cross promoting that your links are relevant, that your voice is in line with how people are engaging on that platform, and that all of the hashtags are lining up the way that you need them to across the different platforms. So don't just like post and automate it because it might not make sense.
Right, totally. Okay, all right, I got you. Here goes another question. I've heard having a Google My Business page is a solid long-term play. What would you recommend to optimize my Google presence?
Oops. I think start with testimonials. Collect as many testimonials for your Google Your Business page as humanly possible. That's where when people are Googling businesses, the first thing they're going to do is look at reviews. So if you set up your Google Your Business page and there are no reviews, people are going to be like, well, I guess no one has anything to say one way or the other about this particular business or realtor or team. So start with that. Beyond that, I think that helps optimize. Beyond that, I think you need to do a lot of like granular things, like making sure your meta tags are there, your keywords are there. Are you using the right sorts of language on your personal website to be able to just like have a consistent presence? And if you need help from an SEO perspective, I would recommend hiring someone to help you with that, because it does get really, really, really specific in terms of how you optimize your presence beyond what you are able to specifically control on your side.
Yeah, and I will say, for anybody who's interested in coming to EXPCon, and you haven't gotten a ticket, reach out to us. There's always these little breakout sessions on this type of things, on this type of stuff as well. Yeah, so we go deep into that stuff. And essentially, they're giving you free value, but if you want to hire them as well, they'll do it for you too. So come to EXPCon, maybe Florida. Any questions so far? I'm going to turn around. All right, cool. All right, so I got a question. What is the worst piece of advice you have ever got in terms of marketing?
For real estate, yeah, or just in general?
Let's do general.
The worst piece of advice. Okay. I mean, I come back to this one a lot, like, make it bigger, make it bolder, make it red. I think this is just like stuff that we've seen in the industry forever. And I used to come across this with past clients where they're like, it should look like this other agent because they're a top producer. So mine should just look like them. Like, their brand isn't what made them top producers. They are top producers and they have a brand. So I would say, like, just because you've seen someone else do something doesn't mean it will work for you. And please don't make it bigger and bolder and red unless you really like the color red, which is fine. Obviously, I'm a fan of red. But I think there's like historical things that people do for real estate marketing. I'm like, it's just marketing. Marketing is telling a story. Tell the best story you can with the voice that you have, and don't make it sound like someone else's, because that will fall flat. It will feel off. If it feels off to you, it will feel off to the people who are engaging with your brand. They should be connected. That's a cameo of my husband who shares my office. Hi, Kev.
What's up?
Hi, Kev. He's up to get a haircut. He has to listen to me talk a lot. Sorry, sweets.
He's like, I'm out. I am done. All right, so, you know what's interesting is I like to do large red on Facebook.
Right.
If it's text, you know, that'd be one of the biggest things that I'll do. Got some more questions. Sarah's back in the house. How do you make posts that make you seem like a human, not someone looking for clients or commissions while still trying to promote yourself?
I love this question because my answer, Sarah, is tell the story. So for example, you want it to be something that pulls people in. So talk about your clients. For example, did you just sell a home to a client who's, there's always a story to who you're working with, right? So tell the home, the story of that home, the story of bringing that client home, navigating the challenges that probably came up during inspections or due diligence or whatever that might be. People who are interacting with you on your page already know that you're a realtor. So what they want to see is, what's it like to work with Sarah? And so if you have a really interesting story, like I know there are some times where a buyer will leave a letter for the seller to sort of help their cause if it's a multiple offer scenario. Like, that's a really interesting thing for someone to hear if they're worried about, like, how do I find the right realtor that will be in my corner given this current market where it really feels like I'm not going to be able to win in a multiple offer scenario? Like, what are the unique stories that you have in the clients that you're working with? And tell those, because you don't need to tell people about clients and commission like you're saying. You need to show them the value that you're bringing to the equation, and that the value of a real estate agent is invaluable, especially in the midst of everything that's going on with antitrust and the lawsuits that are at stake with NAR, et cetera. But people always engage with stories. They'll know what you're selling because you're showing the product, but they want to hear what it's like firsthand from someone who's worked with you. They also want to hear from you, but they want to hear it from someone who's been in their shoes.
Yeah, humans are attracted to stories, so keep on telling them. Besides Sarah, you know, I went to one of Sarah's open houses, and man, it was blowing up. There was people in and out of that place. It looked like a farmer's market. You know, it was nuts. So like maybe something like that is like, do you want to make your open houses, you know, the most, was it visited open house in the neighborhood, X amount of people we had in here. This is how many people are in conversation with in terms of looking to purchase this home, but we know how to drive traffic. So there's always a story.
Or you could be like behind the open house, right? Like have someone film you turning on candles, baking cookies if you bake cookies in your client's house, fluffing pillows, like getting everything ready before someone comes, and then tell the story of like how many people came through the door. Because I think everyone has a different approach to how they do their open houses. And I think it resonates with people who are walking through that door. And if you're a seller or a potential seller looking, you kind of want to know what a realtor would do to make your open house special and get people in the door. So there's a bunch of different ways that you can layer on top of what an open house looks like, feels like, and what the impact is of you driving traffic to it.
Yeah, that's a good point. I had a client years ago that when we walked into the house, went straight to the kitchen table and started eating the warm cookies that were set there. And he was like, you know what? I like this house. And literally they bought the house. So, I told that story a while back. Once it comes up on Facebook memories, I'll share it just for this situation. All right, so we got Allie again. Victoria, you're a badass. What's your favorite piece of marketing advice to give out at that time? At what time? I don't know. This may have came a little bit earlier.
At this time,
I read it wrong. I apologize. I'm from Fayetteville, so.
Allie, you're also a badass. I think that my favorite piece of marketing advice is like, tell it like no one else can. And this is the nerdy writer in me. If you find me on Instagram, you're just going to find a lot of poetry. But tell it like no one else can. And what that means is, I guess it's pay attention to how you engage with your clients when you pick up the phone. Like, do you always greet a specific client in a specific way? Or do you always sign off on a phone call in a specific way? Like, you have a specific tone of voice. And the most fun thing is like how to make that come across to people when they're engaging with you on social, via email, et cetera. Like, you want that to sound the same. And the creepiest, weirdest way you could do that is like fire up ChatGPT and be like, what would you describe this tone of voice as? And like, give it a transcription of a time you had a conversation. And they'll tell you what you sound like. And then you can figure out how to make that consistent across your different channels. Because I think what's most interesting is when, I'll tell this story and I'll just keep highlighting Ivan, my realtor, when he was introduced to me by his principal, because he was a team member, he described him as, Ivan never met a stranger. And I had never heard that phrase before, but I knew what it meant. I was like, oh, it sounds like he'll just be like really nice. I'm being passed from one realtor to another, which feels a little odd, but like, we'll see what Ivan's about. And Ivan signs off all of his emails with, I'm excited and I'm grateful. So like gratitude is a thing that just like weaves through Ivan's experience with his clients. So just figure out what that thing is for you and make sure you're showing all of that early and often in every single piece that you put out in different ways. So just sound like you and the badass that you are, and people will gravitate towards that.
Yeah, Ali, you got some, because when she went to ExpCon, she was there and she actually got invited up to teach a class about YouTube from XCamp. It was her first time putting her name in that, and she crushed it, man. So
XCamp is wild. I was there for a few minutes and I was like, I was running around, but I was there for a few minutes. I was like, I've never seen anything like this before. Like the energy in that room is indescribable. You have to be there when we do it again in October.
Yeah, it's real time value demand, you know, and they classes like that. It's really cool. Any questions? No questions. So what is something you wish you were better at in terms of marketing?
Oh God, seeing details. Sometimes when we're reviewing a lot of different campaigns at once, my eye looks for a specific type of detail, but then kind of can be known to go blind to really specific fine tuning and spelling, phone numbers, et cetera. So I wish I could catch every typo in the world. There was a time where I was a graphic designer in my previous life. So someone would hand me a physical copy of whatever I had spent a really long time designing, and I couldn't even look at it because I knew somewhere in the world was a mistake. So maybe just the process of QAing and quality assuring work is something that our team works really hard to be sure that we have new eyes looking at things so that we try our best to avoid human error. You also have to give yourself grace when those things happen, but I do wish that I personally could catch all of the typos in the whole wide world.
Yeah, I was going to say, you got a solid team now. If you go to my Facebook, I think we'll relate. If you scroll down, you'll see missed words, typos left and right. And my wife used to be a teacher, so she's like, yo, you gotta do better.
She's looking.
Yeah, she's watching. She's checking, and I'm able to edit from there. Do you have a favorite failure or learning moment that you believe has set you up for success in marketing?
I think my favorite failures and learning moments come from leadership, which like cascade down to marketing. And I think the one that sticks out to me is speaking more than I've listened. So I previously led a team of about like 38 people. And I learned to lead from behind and to give my team the room to run at the things that they were really good at. But when I first started, I was previously a one-woman show and I did all of the things. I was the project manager, the copywriter, the graphic designer, the production specialist, the ad strategist, all of the things. It was really hard to start learning how to delegate because it was so easy when everything was mine and I didn't have to describe a process that my brain already understood. But my early failures of delegating are perhaps the biggest learnings for like the leader I hope to have now become, in terms of making sure that if you're going to delegate, and if it's marketing and if it's something else, delegating kind of just crosses a bunch of lanes, that the other person understands everything that you're asking them to do. And the best way to make sure that meaning has been achieved is to ask that person to paraphrase back to you, right? So you might be delegating, I'll give an example. When I'm delegating I need someone to help me clean up a spreadsheet of information that's going to ultimately be a list of emails that we're going to send a campaign out to. When I give that direction, I then say, will you humor me and repeat what I just said back to me? I want to make sure that I haven't created any gaps of understanding for you, because that onus is always on us as leaders. It's not, oh, you didn't understand me. It was, I didn't make myself clear. So if you're learning how to delegate as your team expands, if you're delegating marketing to somebody else, either on your team or if you're outsourcing, make sure that when you're giving them direction, when they repeat it back to you, it is what you intended to say. And if it hasn't come across the way that you intended, keep going until both of you are saying the same thing. And that's how you know that they can run with whatever you've just given them. So learn to delegate. It's a big deal. It will help you buy time to focus on what you're really good at.
Yeah, and it gives you a little bit of insight of who's on your team if they're taking notes. Because if you say, if you repeat that right at the end, and they're like, you're like, well, were you even here?
I had a previous team member that I was like, are you taking notes? He's like, yeah, I got it. It's kind of when you give a really long order at a restaurant and the server's standing there and I'm like, are you gonna write this? No, you've got it? Like, okay, I want to trust you. And then you'll just see what happens 40 minutes later when your food shows up.
Yeah.
I'm a note taker.
Which, you know, it's interesting. Every time I ask that question, C-suite, executives, leaders, it's always the delegate thing. It seems to be always the delegate thing. But that's a really good one, is, you know, repeat back to me what we just talked about. That's a really good hint. Any questions? Anybody else got questions online? Please ask them. If not, I will take over. Who's a marketer you admire and learn from outside of EXP that maybe some of us can watch and follow and learn from?
So many, but I will say two. Donald Miller will be the first one I say. He has a framework called Story Brand, and Donald Miller and the Story Brand are very focused on helping anyone tell the right story to promote their business to the clients they're looking for. And he frames it around just like every single good movie script has essentially the same process, which is like there's a hero who has a problem and they meet a guide who gives them a plan and they use that plan to achieve whatever they were trying to achieve. So you think of, like, you know, Luke and Yoda, you think of Harry Potter and Albus Dumbledore, which will always be my favorite hero and guide duo. So they'll teach you how to use that framework and how to, a lot of it is about increasing conflict and tension for your particular audience, but then showing them that you are the one that can give them the plan with the solution that will change and relieve that tension. So you can he has a podcast that you can start with. And if you're interested, like, there's all kinds of ways to engage with the Story Brand brand.
What's the podcast?
Story Brand by Donald Miller.
There you go. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So he's very much about, like, keep repeating the thing that you need to repeat and make it very clear and concise. So he's great. And then the other one, this is, old school, but I love, is Seth Godin. I think as a thinker, as a marketer, as a person who figures out how to challenge systems, he's incredible. Like, I think when I think of Seth Godin, I think of this idea of thrashing early. So when you're moving really fast, sometimes you forget to ask the right questions early and suddenly you're thrashing late right before a campaign's going out the door. Thrash early, think about the things that you need to think about before it's too late to change them, and try to see around corners and mitigate any risks that you can. But Seth Godin's been doing a daily blog for 1,000 years, and they're really simple snippets. I think it's like Seth's.blog. I don't know, is that what it is? Yeah, so Seth's.blog, okay. That's hard to say. He's literally been doing a really short blog every single day for, I don't know, 15 years. And he's got videos, and those two stick out the most to me right now.
Yeah. Well, that's perfect. I mean, it gives us someone to follow even outside of this. I was checking out your LinkedIn and I don't know where the connection was made, but Gary Vee was definitely part of your world too on LinkedIn as well.
Yeah. He's got a certain way, Gary Vee. And I think he resonates. I think he resonates. And I think everything he says has a lot of value. Personally, right now, I'm gravitating more towards people like Seth and Donald Miller, but, you know, there's a lot that Gary has to say that I think can be translated into what you all do in real estate.
Right, exactly. What is outside of storytelling, maybe something that we need to be looking out for or applying ourselves to, storytelling and AI, outside of those two things, how could we, or what should we be looking at in terms of 2024 as real estate agents to obviously expand, grow our business, agent attraction, just scaling the business overall outside of AI and storytelling, what should we be looking at and researching and leaning into?
I think I'm obsessed with automation. Sometimes that involves AI, sometimes it doesn't. I think making sure that you are nurturing your sphere of influence often is going to be huge in this coming market in terms of like staying top of mind, right? Like I heard this stat is old, but it's something along the lines of like 80% of clients would work with their realtor again, but really only like 20% of them might, because they haven't heard from that realtor since they closed the transaction. So think of creative ways that you could develop like an automated drip campaign that is, you know, reaching out to your sphere of influence on a regular basis. I would say like perhaps twice a month or once monthly, depending on how recent you've been engaging with them and how recently you closed that transaction. But that's the kind of snowball effect you can have, because one, when they're ready to sell again, they're going to remember you. And two, if they have people that they can think of, they're going to send them to you. That I find can be the first thing that drops when people are worried about like, where's my new business going to come from? Like you already, like if you have a database of 2000 people who know you and respect you and understand what you bring to the table, like stay in touch with them. Like, and sometimes that involves picking up the phone, like, hey, how are you doing? Like, how's your kid acclimating to their new school? Remember names, remember dog names, remember birthdays and house anniversaries, I think is another good one. So if you have a CRM that helps you automate that action plan, put that in place so you only have to think about it once, and then let that CRM do its job for you and deliver additional leads from new places. And honestly, that's cost neutral, right? It involves sweat equity in putting the campaign together and figuring out what you're saying in each of these touch points, but ultimately it's going to pay itself off.
Yeah, and I think the amount of work to keep that relationship going is not as much work as it took to get the actual lead. So it makes more sense that that's where your energy effort is on the other side of the deal. And something else I'll say is within our database, we do AFR. So AFB, Ask for Business, is for, you know, circle of influence, non-licensed people. AFR is Ask for Referral. And here's a question that we do for agents that we meet at EXPCon or really anywhere. Met one at a Quick Stop in Virginia one time. I was like, give me your card, right? We live too close to Ask Referrals. But I'll reach out to them and I'll hit them with a question about quarterly, which is who do you use as an agent in the Carolinas? I always say the Carolinas because if they're in California or whatever, they just know the Carolinas, maybe not North or South. And I want that opportunity, you know, of just all of the Carolinas. But that's an easy one. You'll get about 50% of the people say, you know what? I don't have anybody, man. Till next time, I wish I could help you. And I'm like, yo, it's me. You need to save my name in there and put Carolina agent in your phone.
Love that.
So that's been an easy one to remind, not just non-licensed people, but also licensed people who could be passing you referrals. That's been an easy follow-up to do.
Yeah. And I think also like with our model, you never know if someone would be like, oh, listen, Ruben, I'd love to work with you, but I'm moving out of North Carolina. You staying in touch means that's great. I can't wait to find you the right agent in California or West Virginia or wherever you're going, right? Yeah. Like that's also opportunity for you to maintain that business from a referral standpoint. You never know who's going to tell you back.
Totally. We just passed one to someone within our organization in Texas because I've been staying in a relationship with them. Best perk of being the vice president of EXP marketing.
Is a perk being able to do the job that I love from literally anywhere I want? Because I was sitting at Jubala Coffee the other day going, feeling like I had to apologize for doing work at a coffee shop, and then realizing like, I don't have to do that. I can be exactly where I am and continue to do a job that I love with an incredible team with the best agents in the industry. Like I find that to be a really huge perk. And being able to be there for my kid. My kid is 3. So a job like this with the flexibility that we have with just being fully cloud-based lets us be the career adults that we are while also being able to never miss the, you know, Thanksgiving potluck or the school recitals of the future when he, I guess, will be on stage doing things that I have to clap at, like, good job, dancing. So I think for me, it's the flexibility, right? Like going out of town and still being able to do my job and not feeling like I'm missing something on either side, on the life side or on the work side. It weirdly feels like you can have everything that you've worked really hard for and have fun doing that. So I'm feeling really grateful. I feel like it was an interesting start of the year for me, and I'm feeling like everything has been coming together over the past 6 months. So the gratitude is my favorite part of this job, just feeling like there's freedom to be able to do this from anywhere. That's huge.
Yeah, and just, you know, future reference, as your kid gets old, boy or girl?
Boy. His name is Dean.
Dean? That's my brother's middle name. That's interesting. But the as he grows up, he's only going to do one thing when you go to his anything at school. And that's just, he's going to look for you. That's all he's going to do. He's going to look for you and see. And that's what's going to make him smile from ear to ear. It's just you being there. So that you having that option is huge. And that's a huge benefit. Question on that. Some people don't, including me, don't necessarily want to put their family on social media all the time. And not saying that's a good or bad thing. But what do you say to that? What do you say to that? Because you do hear some, I have posted before, like family, and they're like, man, we'd love to know more about your family. You know, this is other people on social media. And I'm like, yeah, well, you know, maybe, maybe not. What are your thoughts on that, including the family, in terms of just sharing the story?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of things about this question, Ruben. I like it very much. First thing that I think about is my favorite photographer. Her name is Mary Beth Kate. She took my most recent headshots. It was like, the way that she says it is like, if it feels awkward, it looks awkward. So if it feels awkward and not right to you to share your family, then don't. However, if you want people to understand you as a person separate from the business and the real estate that you do, and family is an aspect of your life that is important to you, that's something that just like gives more dimension to who you are as a person and gives people more of an insight into you outside of real estate. It is part of your life. It's I think it's the most important part of our lives. But from a privacy standpoint, I'm also seeing an influencer that I follow. Her name is Jenna Kutcher. She's made a conscious decision not to show her daughter's faces on her Instagram anymore. And I respect that. But what Jenna's done, which is really interesting, is her daughters are still visible, but there's always an angle, right? Like you're seeing them from behind, right? Like they're walking out their front door. So you might see like pigtails in the back of their heads, or they're silhouetted so you can't see them. So that's I think it's really interesting because no one even noticed that she did that because she just like changed the direction and the way that her family appeared. And that made her more comfortable. And I get it, right? Like, I'm not sure what Dean will say when he's older, when he's like, you've been blasting my face on all of these platforms for 20 years without asking me. It's one of those like, access is just like an interesting question we have to ask ourselves right now about our kids. I haven't thought too much about it personally for us. And my husband's a photographer, so he takes all the good pictures of the family. But I guess to answer you, like if it doesn't feel right, Ruben, don't do it. Or maybe there's an interesting way to do it. Like you could show your kids' hands or like their little feet if they're kicking a soccer ball or whatever. Like that might just like be a cool angle to take. If it doesn't feel right, like no one's making you do anything that you don't want to do.
Yeah, totally. I get it. How about you guys and gals? Any questions? Any questions?
You guys having fun?
Yeah, at least they're taking notes. I'm watching a lot of note taking.
Oh, good. I hope it's good.
Yeah, of course. Actually, let me bring this up actually real quick. Ruben, I should do the same thing and have the referral agent save me as Dustin, LA agent. I see what he did there. You see what he did there? Since we consider our area, Lower Alabama. Look, he put his place, who he is, and how you should say his name. Good job. Good job, Dustin. I
like it,
that.
Dustin.
Yeah. What profession, and this is going to get a little fun since we're coming up on time, what profession other than your own would be fun to attempt?
Writing. I have a manuscript that I'm woefully behind on getting back to edit, but I would love to, in an alternate version of this reality, be a writer and just be able to focus my energy on writing.
Fiction?
Right now it's mostly poetry. It's a memoir. But yeah, mostly poetry. I'm not good at fiction. I don't know why. I just write what I know and I try to make it sound specific. Specifically non-specific. But that's like the one place I can get lost is, you know, looking at the same stanza of the same poem for 3 hours, being like, what just happened?
Yeah. You brought up Star Wars and Harry Potter. So yeah, that's why I asked the fiction question. But that'd be great. You should sit. I don't know, up to you. You should share some of what you have at the moment, you know?
Sure.
What
do
you
have? On my Instagram.
Oh, it's all on your Instagram? Yeah. Like your poetry?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, great. Perfect.
There was a new one yesterday, which was all kinds of interesting. But yeah, that's right. That's like all I do with Instagram. I'm like not the strongest photographer in this household. So I stick to poems.
Well, that's cool. So if anybody wants to go check that out, they could go check that out. What never fails to make you laugh?
What was the first part of the question?
What never fails to make you laugh?
Dumb questions.
I don't know why I'm finding it hard. I mean, like, I guess because my first answer was crude. What never fails to make me laugh? I mean, I think listening to my kid laugh always makes me laugh. Like, just like Dean laughing is just contagious. So I would say that was the first one. But also just like, anyway, farts. Like when my kid farts, I think it's the funniest thing in the world. I'm like, yeah, dude, good for you.
Yeah.
That
was
my first answer. So there you go. Never fails to make me laugh.
So he's going to love that fast forward 20 years from now. He's like, man, mom, thank you for that. But everyone toots. So there you go, Dean. Everyone toots. two more questions. What question do you have for us?
What would you like to see corporate marketing focus on for 2024 U.S.?
It's a tough one.
Yeah. I know. I was like, I will ask it. It's a big one.
I'll say, going on the storytelling thing, it'd be interesting to, because, you know, some of the people within, and very accessible. I mean, this is how I'm able to set up all this stuff. Obviously, I just reach out to you guys, and it's been great. And then you guys, you're not hiding by, I mean, other firms I've been to, there's leaders that are basically hiding to make sure that they're not seen at some of the events, all in, including Glenn Sanford, man, he'll walk, it doesn't even matter, right? Like, access is there. But maybe for me, this is just something I'm thinking about, is it maybe some of the storytelling of the day-to-day struggle, backstabbing, wins, from maybe some of the top people that may feel as if you'll never get to those positions, you know, because like there are stories that I'll share on social media that seem like, man, why is, and not that I'm some big figure, but how is he going through this right now? I thought he was at a higher level. And maybe some of the executive team, vice president of marketing, actually documenting the process of growth, the failures of it, and telling the story and being transparent and vulnerable to make that person become a little bit more real and someone that they can relate to when they do see him at an event as well, would be something I would throw out there.
Interesting, I like that. It reminds me of, I don't know if y'all tuned into, I'm practicing my y'alls. Every time I say it, I still realize it. I don't know if y'all tuned into the State of the Union a couple weeks ago, but at some point, Leo Pareja got a little bit choked up because we were housing and like being able to own property is really important to Leo. And so as he was talking about it, he visibly got emotional on the call, and Michael even said, I love when Leo gets emotional. And I thought that I saw Leo getting choked up, but I wasn't sure. And then Michael was like, I love when Leo gets emotional about this stuff. And he was like, housing is just really important to me. And so I liked that. It shows our humanity. So thank you for sharing that.
You're welcome. Yeah, one of his video on here, bringing him into these Be More trainings, is one of the best performing videos we have as Leo, because he does come across very authentic and just kind of says what's on his mind. And then the last question is, well, it kind of rolls into that, which is, you know, what question do you have for everybody who's watching, may watch this later, but maybe you ask a question where it may be an agent outside of EXP, because you did ask the question, you know, for us that EXP could do better at, I guess, in terms of marketing, maybe a question for everyone outside of EXP, what would you ask them?
Hmm. The first one that comes to my brain is, what would change your mind? If we're talking to agents from outside of EXP, what would change your mind about making the decision and saying yes to joining? Because if we can know what that is, we can then make sure that we're answering those questions and giving our agents the support you all need to bring like-minded agents like yourselves over to the EXP family.
Right. Okay, cool. And if you guys will do me a favor and answer that question either in the comments or DM one of us or whoever, just let us know. That'd be great. Any last questions? Okay, very cool. Very cool. And if anyone else has any questions later, just ask it. We will get to those questions. But thank you so much, Victoria, for your time, your energy, your input, your value. We appreciate it very much. Thank you.
My pleasure, Ruben. Thank you all very much. Happy holidays and Happy New Year. We're almost there.
Bye. Welcome to North Carolina.
Bye. Thank you. Bye, everybody.
See ya.